Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and he's back. We found him. We had a big search party out in London, but here he is, Dr. Bob Swore from Camdor Global. What's up, Dr. Bob?
Todd, great to be on the show again. It's been a while.
I know. You've been hiding. What's going on, man? Give us the scoop. You've been busy working. What do you mean? Work shouldn't get in the way of the Bubba Show, should it?
It's been a crazy time in the world. I think between Brexit and Donald Trump and all the stuff that's happening in the world right now, I think it's kept me very, very busy and honest, I guess.
Yeah, you know, so what do you say? What does everything, just a general overview of what everything looks to you right now, what does it look like to you right now? Is it just a general economy? We can start with the worldwide and then look into the individuals.
Well, look, I think when you look at the world right now, what I can see is that, you know, as we all know, things are extremely expensive right now. No matter where you go, whether it's equities, bonds, pretty much any asset class, it's overpriced. And, you know, everyone's kind of gotten that Chuck Price mentality where, you know, while the music's playing, they're all dancing, and nobody quite knows when to stop. The bit that I find interesting is that if you look at central banks, whether it's the Fed, whether it's the Bank of England and others, you know, you've seen in the last few months them starting to slightly sing a slightly different hymn to policymakers on the government side. And I think that's mainly because what they're realizing is that, firstly, in some countries at least, inflation is picking up. And even though they can keep ignoring it for a while, at some point they're worried if it comes back in a big way. Secondly, they've all started to wake up to the enormous amount of debt that's now sitting in their economies, and they've suddenly realized that actually when the next crisis comes, and it's not an if but when, they don't really have much in the tank to fight it. And so I'm pretty sure that what some of them are doing is almost trying to, very belatedly, and I think probably far too late, trying to build up some reserves with a view to fighting that future battle. And if you look at the Bank of England as an example, you know, with Brexit, the economy out here has been pretty soft. You've had, you know, the pound's been pretty much free-falling for a number of months now. And at the same time, while you would expect the Bank of England to be extremely dovish in this environment and be just terrified of having a recession, at the last meeting, they voted to keep rates where they were by 5-3. It was pretty split. And a number of them have become extremely vocal, calling for rate rises. So it's kind of interesting. I kind of see central bankers starting to try and show some independence, probably at the wrong time, and probably exactly when policymakers want them least to.
Now, why is the bank, the European Central Bank, why is Draghi screwing around now? I mean, why did he make the announcement on Thursday? Why is he trying to push the euro currency so much higher now? What is his motive behind that? Can you tell me?
Look, as I said, I think they're all trying to build up their reserves. I mean, Draghi is probably looking at some of the data coming out of Europe and concluding that maybe Europe is now starting to grow again. I mean, what's interesting about Europe anyway is that ever since the British kind of declared Brexit last year, perversely, the Europeans have kind of united a bit. You know, I guess Britain's the common enemy, much as the Americans had Britain, you know, a couple hundred years ago. So they've suddenly united, and it's given them this sense of purpose. And the growth numbers have been a bit better. So I can see Draghi almost thinking that, you know, maybe now is the time when I've got some leeway to start effectively putting some stuff away for a future battle. I also suspect that when you look at Macron and Merkel, they're kind of keen also to try and kind of propagate this idea of a stronger Europe because it suits them. It suits them both politically, but also in terms of trying to get this European project back on track.
So, I mean, what they've done has really not worked. I mean, it was funny. I was doing a little bit of investigation and, you know, obviously the dollar is getting slaughtered. And actually, you know, if you remember, you and I talked and I thought that the dollar would go to 94, which is where it's at. But when you go back and if you look back at some of the asset classes that are dollar denominated, I mean, take a look at gold. Gold is 10% lower than it was the last time the dollar was here. So it seems to me that the central banks have successfully taken money out of the system and really just screwed the average investor. What do you think?
No, they have. I mean, there's a chart I saw just a few weeks ago which showed kind of all the assets that have been sort of put out in the market over the last 10 years, and showing all the bonds have been issued, the equity, and so on, and which netted that off against all of the central bank purchases over those last 10 years. So, all the government bonds, mortgages, and so on. And what you find actually is that the net number turned negative probably about a year or two back and has been persistently negative since. So you're right. I mean, what they've done is they've actually sucked a lot of stuff out of the system. And what's fascinating is when you go to the derivatives market, for example, I mean, they've been sucking out of the market exactly the stuff everybody else wants to have, in other words, collateral. And I think that's created a far, far more fragile system. And unfortunately, I kind of think that you've done it in an environment where, remember that Prince song, When Doves Cry?
Yeah.
And I kind of think that, that song is about to make a comeback, at least in the economic sphere.
I mean, it's just, obviously, my views are, now you're more of an economist and you understand a lot of the stuff, why it should work better, but I don't think they've really progressed at anything but destroying wealth from the average guys. I mean, certainly, I don't think there's been any better time in history that the uber wealthy have done better. This has been like the most unbelievable time if you're an uber wealthy kind of person, here, is it not?
No, it's been amazing. I mean, look, if you're sitting on the right side of the balance sheet, it's a great time. But the thing is that everything they've done is going to increase inequality. I mean, central banks never think about redistribution when they sit there and, cut interest rates. I mean, you have a yield curve that has been suppressed now for a decade. I mean, the market pricing mechanism no longer exists. The only asset price you have is whatever you choose to make up on the day. So if you're wealthy, it's just been getting better and better. And by the way, you've also got to remember that when you have this much debt in the world, I mean, if you look at the Bank of National Settlements, according to their data, you've got over $100 trillion now of debt securities around the world. And that's probably just the public stuff. That doesn't include all the private debt that's floating around. And the thing is that if you think about debt in the context of inequality just for one second, the reality is, who owns debt? I mean, debt is bonds, debt is obligations, it's investments and funds. That's owned by rich people. And usually, if you have lots and lots of debt, there is generally a transfer from poor people to rich people. I mean, student debt, auto loans, etc. And the thing is that, there's nothing wrong with that. But when you've got this much debt, you end up skewing the system so badly that, there's a wonderful anger out there. And in Europe, for example, they have this belief that somehow they reached peak populism when Macron won, that was it, populism's been defeated. But that's crap, because frankly speaking, Macron was as much a rejection of the French system as Marine Le Pen would have been. He was a guy who came out of nowhere, set up a brand new party, which then proceeded to win the French presidential election and sweep the polls when they went to parliament. So, I think that the problem is all they've done, to your point, is bury the bad stuff for another year or so before it comes back again.
And we're visiting with our pal, Dr. Bob Swarup from Camdor Global. And, of course, he likes to come in, and he's an economist, but he does think more on the other side. But in the meantime, he is being brought to you by Audible Books. And, of course, for you listeners of The Bubba Show, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. I recommend, obviously, Fed Up and, of course, Creature from Jekyll Island, as well as some of the Stuart Wood stuff. Right now I'm reading or I'm listening to Indecent Proposal. Great series. And, of course, you want to download the show every single day, you go to libertytalk.fm and you can download The Bubba Show every single day. And don't forget about the Sporting Edge on the weekends. And of course, there's Bubba's Bottom Line, which is available to you at BubbaTrading.com. And of course, we have a lot of other things there for you. So make sure you go check out BubbaTrading.com and check out Audible Books at audibletrial.com/The Bubba Show. Make sure you get it done today. And we're going to stop by here for a break. We'll come back with more from our buddy, Dr. Bob Swarup from Camdor Global, after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with my man, Dr. Bob Swarup from Camdor Global, also the author of Money Mania, Panics, Booms, and Busts. And of course, we're in a boom cycle still. I guess we're never going down. And so, Dr. Bob, you are an economist and I'm not. But, I look at things very simply, and I know you do as well. I mean, you're really a smart economist because you're willing to look at other ideas that aren't just in mathematical theory. But when I heard a couple of weeks ago when Janet Yellen did her Humphrey Hawkins testimony, and, of course, she came out in a very dovish statement, but I said, no, they're actually doing a backdoor rate hike, because if they start to liquidate their bond positions, then that will push rates up on their own without the Fed having to get involved. Am I wrong or am I right?
No, you're right. No, I think what's interesting is that this whole debate over what happens to the Fed's balance sheet, again, I can see the reason why they're trying to liquidate it is because they're trying to rebuild their arsenal for the next crisis. And in some ways, you know, central bankers have not done either themselves or the world in many favors over the last few years. And you know, it's kind of interesting. They are trying almost a little bit too late, probably not enough at this point in time. I mean, if you were the Fed, frankly speaking, you should be hiking rates a long time ago. You should be not keeping rates where they were for a lot longer than you've been doing now. But at the same time, you look at the U.S. economy. It's actually, you know, starting to show signs of weakness. I mean, you look at auto loans, for example.
auto
sales have now been declining for months on end. And the fastest growing segment of the auto loan sector is what they now call the eternity loan, which is, you know, loans of about 6 to 7 years.
I mean, it's terrible. I don't understand that. Again, this is, let me ask you this way, Dr. Bob. If we did nothing and let the banks go out of business. Now, again, my theory was always to bail out the depositors of the banks, but not the bankers, because, you know, it's the what we're supposed to be worried about is the people that are depositing in the bank, not the banks making so much money. OK, so if we didn't let the banks fail and bailed out the depositors with all that printed money they made, then the depositors would have been fine. They would have found another bank, knowing that the Fed would stand behind the banks, but not put them back in business to come back and create this whole mess in which they created again. I say that if they had let the markets alone and let the markets sort it out, and the only thing they would have done was, again, bail out, you know, the depositors, okay, that we would be on the mend now and we'd be probably prospering instead of still waiting for that final crash and another big collapse in the markets. What do you think?
No, you're right. I mean, you've made the matter much worse. I mean, you know, if you think about it, it's amazing. If you're a policymaker, you have this real fear of recession. And I don't really get that because, you know, there's nothing wrong with a recession. A recession is a pretty natural part of the economic cycle. And it's nothing more than, I think, partly an economy breathing, because everything has to breathe to live. But secondly, all a recession really is just taking misallocated capital and reallocating it to where it's more productive. And I think the problem they had was that by trying to avoid the recession and trying to avoid the next one and the next one, what they've kind of done is almost create actually a depression that's in the making. And the problem now is that you've got so much debt in the system that the number of areas where fragility can now come from is enormous. And when you throw into it what society now thinks, it's terrible. I mean, in the UK, for example, you've got this guy, Jeremy Corbyn, who's the opposition leader, and he is straight from the extreme left, very kind of Marxist in views, very much about redistribution. And, you know, everyone thought he was a complete joke. When the election was called, Theresa May called the snap election, you know, a couple of months ago now, on the ground that she thought that she had such a huge lead in the polls, she was going to sweep Parliament and get a supermajority. Instead, this guy, who seems to be ultra-left-wing and out of touch, ended up having such a strong run at the polls and getting so much support, particularly from young people, that she actually lost the tiny majority she had, and now there's a hung parliament. And I think that shows the danger. I mean, you know, the Europeans and others forget that the peril. I mean, if you look at, say, the U.S. with Donald Trump, I mean, you know, the New York Times, the Washington Post, and all these guys love talking about, you know, how his poll numbers are terrible and how, you know, he's laughing, joking, respite. And maybe they're right. But I think what's fascinating is, if you look at those polls, something like 9 in 10 people who voted for him think he's doing a great job. And whether you want to call them idiots or not, the reality is you can't ignore the fact that there are a lot of people who look at someone like Donald Trump and think that they need someone different, someone who's basically not of the system.
No, I personally think he's doing a very good job. I think that the real problem is you have too many crooks in Washington, and they like it the way it was. They like to be able to have, you know, listen, if you put any of the congressmen and Senate on Obamacare, we'd have this health care deal done already. They would not stand for it if it was theirs, right? And if you had, you know, if you wanted to fix Social Security, put them on Social Security instead of their own private pension, you won't have these problems. And they'd get these bills passed. But really what you have is not only the left are in his way, but a lot of the rights in his way as well, which because they don't like the idea of a Donald Trump who can actually change the way that we look at politics and change the way things can be done. What do you think?
Well, there's far too many vested interests. I mean, if you look at healthcare being a very good example, I mean, the single biggest problem with healthcare is the cost inflation within it. I mean, you have a system that over the last 30 or 40 years has been, you know, allowing, on one hand, demand to rise, because obviously more and more people can get health care, health insurance is spreading and so on. But at the same time, the supply is getting restricted. So, you know, you have lots of restrictions around opening of hospitals, hiring of doctors, etc. And if you actually look at the numbers, by the way, of doctors being trained, all this kind of stuff, that number has been falling gradually. It's not very high. And we then start to marry that to the fact that whether it's Obamacare or Trump care, whichever system comes in, none of them tackle the cost inflation that sits in the healthcare space is unbelievable. I mean, the fact that you cannot, I mean, in this country as an example, the NHS is not a great system. It's got lots of flaws within it. But what's fascinating is the one thing they are allowed to do is because they're the single biggest buyer of drugs out there, they're allowed to negotiate the price of those drugs and allowed to negotiate the price of an equipment. And they're allowed to say, we're going to buy not a few pills, but a few million pills, and therefore we're at a much better price. And in the U.S., fascinatingly, you can't do that. You actually can't do the most basic bit of capitalism that you would expect anyone to be able to do, which is basically say, if I'm buying more, I want a better price.
Yeah, I mean,
you solved that problem, by the way. You solved a lot of the healthcare issues in terms of cost.
And, of course, you know, it's an amazing thing how the markets function and things go on, and we can't seem to get it together on the right scope. But that just shows you how much more of the manipulation and things that are going on that really are not part of a true free and economy. And these are things that, you know, of course, we continue to watch and knowing that at the end of the day, okay, at some point, you know, there's got to be, as they say, something's got to give. We don't know, you know, what, we don't know when, but again, that's just the model that we are seeing, that it just shows you how screwed up the global economy is and how screwed up everything is, because there's not any real reason to believe that we will ever see a resolve as long as we're running under the same path and the same pattern. These are things that, you know, go on for years and, you know, and have gone on for just an extended period of time. And the real issue is how do you get it solved? And that's one of the things that obviously we're talking with our friend Dr. Bob about. And we just need to figure out, you know, the right way to handle things, because overall it's much more of a disaster than anybody can possibly imagine. And this is why we always sit there and wait. And again, I find it to be troubling, but I will come back with more from Dr. Bob. And of course, this segment was brought to you by BarkBox, BarkBox.com. Really great stuff, great product for your dog. And of course, for you listeners of The Bubba Show, you can go to BarkBox.com. They're offering you an opportunity to receive one free extra month of BarkBox at GetBarkBox at BarkBox.com. Now, again, I use them. They're great. And to receive one free month, go to GetBarkBox.com/The Bubba Show. Again, that's GetBarkBox.com/The Bubba Show to receive an extra month of BarkBox for free. Also, go to libertytalk.fm and download The Bubba Show every single day. And don't forget, don't leave me hanging. And, of course, don't forget the Sporting Edge on the weekends. And, of course, at bubbatrading.com, you can get Bubba's Bottom Line, which is also on YouTube. So make sure you check it out and give me your grade, give me your rating. And we're going to step out here. We'll be back with more from Dr. Bob after the break. Todd Bubba Horowitz, The Bubba Show, coming right back to you. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz is our guy, Dr. Bob Swor from Candor Global, also the author of Money Mania, Panics, Booms, and Busts. And of course, we are probably looking for a bust cycle here. But Dr. Bob, let's be honest. I mean, the markets have gone up and we've been looking for a bust, and the markets just keep going up anyways. And, you know, we have a cheap money, which allows it to go in. But I want to talk about earnings for a minute as this cycle works, because my views are simple. The earnings are being built on the cheap money because the companies, they're not using CapEx, they're not spending to build these companies. What they're doing is they're expanding their balance sheet by contracting inside, cutting on employees, cutting expenses, and using the free money, which makes them obviously very profitable and very good for the few. But it does not do a lot for the economy, which goes to show the big separation between the economy and actual Wall Street. What do you think?
Well, there is a huge separation between now the financial asset and the real asset underpinning it. I mean, if I look at the thing right now, I mean, you know, it's not a great time to be a bear. It certainly doesn't pay much these days. And, you know, I think the fact that you've got this disconnect between a world that's full of uncertainty and populism, and then you go to markets that are just filled with euphoria, tends to create plenty of bear traps, and has done so. The idea reminds me of a Japanese proverb, which says that the sparrow flying behind the hawk always thinks the hawk is running away. And then, you know, if I look at the markets right now, I mean, company earnings have been going up for the reasons you said. By the way, also, if you pull up a chart of, you know, debt among corporates against share buybacks, that's pretty much a perfect one-to-one correlation. So if you're sitting there holding equities, you know, there's just been this enormous amount of buying and buying and buying that's only going to drive up the price. The problem is that when you look at the amounts of debt out there, the system has to topple over. And I think, you know, we keep waiting for that canary in the coal mine to come up. And I'm not sure, maybe it comes in a company or it comes in some kind of body in the markets. But I think where it does come, by the way, is very much in the political sphere. I mean, you know, you take, for example, this guy in the UK, I'm thinking about Jeremy Corbyn. You know, there's a really good chance that he actually potentially can become the next prime minister. And if he becomes the next prime minister, he actually does not care about the markets in any sense of reform. So his first and foremost policies will be all around increasing benefits, taking on more debt, all the kind of stuff that markets hate. And that kind of wobble is really much harder for equities to follow in the UK, for example. In the US, you start looking at, you know, all the stuff that's going on around. I mean, it's fascinating. The Republicans, you know, got it so wrong by focusing on healthcare, whereas they actually focused on doing stuff that was relatively easy, like, you know, tax reform and stuff. They were a lot further along. And they probably, by the way, they've also built up some reservoirs to protect themselves against some downturns. But in reality, by not doing that, what you have is a country which the anger has not been dealt with. And when it starts to come through, frankly speaking, I think the markets will find the next bailout will probably go direct to people rather than through the holders of bonds and equities.
Now, Bob, you're a young guy. You're younger than me, and you've been around. You're a trained economist. And of course, you've watched the manipulation of the economies, of the fiat currency system, of everything for the last, as long as you've been an economist for, and maybe longer than that. In your mind, is there ever a chance that we actually go back and have a true free market system? Do we ever get these idiots out of the way and let the markets actually price the assets by themselves? Or is this destiny and they're going to continue to take away from the middle class, which is really what happens in these types of situations, that the middle class continue to get punished because the wealthy get richer and again, they don't really care. And the middle class has to pay, you know, they like to inflate their assets so they can pay more taxes. And of course, then their assets collapse anyways. But is there ever a chance in your mind that there would be another true free market system?
I don't know if you ever can get truly free markets. I mean, you know, I kind of get the impression when I look at history that free markets are as much of a myth as true communism. And if you look at communism, communism is all about the notion that somehow we can all share with each other and be equal. And in reality, human nature very quickly puts bait that every communist state rapidly finds that trying to share equally means that some want to be more equal than others, a bit like Animal Farm. I think the problem with free markets is that this notion of letting people freely trade together with no interference, people inevitably create rules. I mean, that rule is regulation, that rule is borders, that rule is immigration. And there's so many things that get in the way that, you know, if I look at all these free trade zones that are created, you know, like the European Union or NAFTA, one could argue that these free trade zones aren't actually free trade zones, they're protectionist zones, because they're trying so hard to carve out some little element of genuinely free trade, but then they get a whole bunch of rules around it that make it really hard. And if you're a small company, if you're an SME, in most countries in the world, you try and actually deal with international taxation, even within a free trade zone, and you deal with all the supply chain regulations and things like that. It's impossible. I mean, simple example, I run out what would be in the context of most people in SME. And, you know, we have clients in the U.S. and the U.K. and Germany and so on. And, you know, we had a client in Germany, and we tried to build them. We then had to put on their sales tax, or value-added tax, as we call it out here. But the Germans have a completely different system to the U.K. So we then had to go and look at registering for a German tax. And the whole thing got so convoluted. And that was meant to be within, by the way, a European Union pre-Brexit, where you're supposed to be able to trade freely between countries without any interference.
But of course, we have nothing but interference. But you know, when I look at, I once said, and I made the statement, and I said, they've really destroyed many of the free markets. I mean, even the banking system. I mean, we're down to, basically five or six banks that control everything, right? And you take, they screw the little guy because they operate on a whole different plane, and they don't have, their proportion of expenses is like 1/10 or 1/100 of the percentage of a small bank. So the small banker is done, I believe. The guy in the neighborhood, you go and shake his hand and say, hey, can we help work something out here? There is no more of that, right?
Well, I think, people who are big always love regulation because regulation creates barriers to entry. I mean, you're right. We have far too few banks now. And, the problem actually now is that when the next crisis arrives, you're too big to fail really is the problem, because statistically, everything will fail eventually, and you've now made the problem worse. If you were sensible, if you were to really think about how to run banking in the future, what you would end up saying is that the most stable systems in the world are where you don't have 10 banks, but you probably have 100 or 500 banks. Because you know what? If one of them goes under, if five of them go under, you don't really care, because yes, it's terrible and people lose their money and bonds don't get paid, but the system kind of absorbs that hit and moves on. If you think of us as being a complex network, which is what we are as a society and as an economy, and you only have five or six nodes in that whole network, you take one of them out, that's a big hit to an economy. And it doesn't matter how much money you throw at the problem, eventually that problem is going to be too big to surmount by just purely throwing.
And of course, that is the problem we talk about here often on the Bubba Show, is the banking system is obviously being swallowed up. And of course, that issue remains one of the main problems with our overall economy, is that we can't seem to get past the fact that this too big to fail is ridiculous, and that the overall picture is brutal. When you look at it, because the banks have far too much power, and of course they've got the backstop behind them, which then allows them to do things that may not be quite so kosher And of course, it lets them, make a lot more money with a lot less risk. It's a nice business model if you can take it, right? You have almost virtually no risk because you know that somebody's going to bail you out. Something should happen, and of course, these are issues. These are very big issues in the banking system, and of course, it becomes a much bigger problem as things start to tighten up. And of course, with everything going on in the globe, you can see that obviously they're trying to, eliminate, even, now the, with the, even with the healthcare, they're, talking about, single payer systems. Those are more things to try to take away the actual rights and things that we have, because again, every bit of freedom they take away. And that's really what the banking system is doing, because they're forcing it into, a position that nobody can compete. So then it takes away the free market system. And I think this is something that you need to really just focus on, because this is where the problems exist within our system. The inability to let competition come into markets. And we've seen that in many areas. And I don't think that we're going to see it change anytime soon. And that's the issue that really has to be worked on, because again, there's way too much manipulation. And again, that's a problem. And of course, we'll come back with more with Dr. Bob Swarup from Camdor Global. In the meantime, this segment was brought to you by Casper Mattress. And of course, they've got great mattresses, and they're really trying to make a big surge here. And I think you'd be very happy with what they do. But what I would suggest you do is go check it out. They're offering Bubba Show listeners a $50 off towards any mattress purchase. And of course, what you need to do is you go to get the $50, you go to CasperTrial.com/TheBubbaShow. Again, that's CasperTrial.com/TheBubbaShow, and you get $50 off of any mattress purchase. And on your way, stop at LibertyTalk.fm and download The Bubba Show. Do that every single day. Don't forget. And of course, don't forget The Sporting Edge as well. And check out BubbaTrading.com. I got a lot of nice things up there for you. And of course, I write for it every day, and I've got a lot of good things for you to look at. So go check that out. And we'll be back right after the break with more from Dr. Bob Swarup from Camdor Global. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Dr. Bob Swarup from Camdor Global, also the author of Money Mania, Panics, Booms, and Busts. Go buy it on Amazon. He needs a few bucks. You know, it's tough out there in London. You know, you got a lot of problems in Europe. You need some cash, and now you can overpay for it because the euro is so high. So listen, Dr. Bob. All right. So we talk about this manipulation, which sucks. Okay. It just, again, it doesn't make for a real true free market, and we know that. We talked about that. And is there anything that ever becomes, where we let competition, there's so many regulations that it's hard to have competition. So even if you want to kind of manipulate markets a little bit, isn't there a way they can figure out to let people compete for price? What Amazon has done in the retail space is they've crushed everybody, and they forced everybody to drop their prices or drop out of business. They're the second version of Walmart. Walmart was first when they came into areas and they put all retailers out of business, which I don't like, but that's what happens. And now there's Amazon. And again, we don't have that same competitive spirit where cell phones, everybody's can lower prices. Is there any way that we can get this in the banking industry and in the insurance industry to let them freely trade and compete state lines and all the other stuff? You ever see that happening?
Well, I think to do that, you have to get rid of regulation or a lot of it. I think if you ask me, see, the problem is this, is that I think society, no matter what you do, will always demand rules. So you can't get away from regulation. But I think the mistake we've made over the last maybe half century is that we took regulation away from being principles-based to being very prescriptive. And I think that's the problem. When you start putting lots and lots of pages of documents and everything else, you just create so much reading material and so much compliance stuff that only people with significantly deep pockets and with a lot of volume can then start to compete. I think if you took it back to principle, we have a much more state of system. I mean, there's already an anecdote, which is that in the UK, back in the 1800s, I think it was around the 1860s, They had a couple of runs on banks and insurance companies, and they went under. And so, you know, back at the time, they didn't really have much in the way of a public sector and much in the way of regulation. And they couldn't afford to either. I mean, London, for example, didn't even have a proper police force back then. So, you know, the idea of getting a regulator beyond that was laughable. So what they did was they required, as you might expect, every insurance company to publish what its capital ratio was. Fine, that's sensible. But then what they also asked them to do was, alongside that, to publish a short document, no more than a couple of pages, laying out all the assumptions that went into the calculation of that capital ratio. And that was the regulation they used. And it was remarkable because, of course, what it suddenly meant was that you could have an insurance company claiming to have the most healthy capital ratio, but then they'd have to tell the market what assumptions they'd made to get there. And the market could then figure out for themselves if these guys were worth lending money to or borrowing money from or whatever. And so it was a most beautiful bit of self-regulation because suddenly you'd introduce this transparency where people could actually look through to your underlying and tell if you were making it up or if you were actually genuinely running a good book. And the result was we didn't actually have a single run on an insurance market or a bank after that for probably close to a century.
So, I mean, all this stuff is kind of ridiculous, in my opinion. And, of course, again, I've been like this all along. It's not like it's new for me. And it, of course, it becomes very restrictive. And, of course, the last thing I have for you today, Dr. Bob, is, you know, of course, they keep bragging about full employment in this country, but tax receipts are lower, which means that we don't, the jobs we have suck, right? I mean, how do we get the growth coming back to America where we can actually start to employ people at wages that they can actually afford to live? Because right now, the wages most of them make, they can't even afford to live. So how are they going to live, and how are we going to get back to that?
Well, I guess, I mean, one thing is that going back to employment, don't forget, you may have close to full employment officially, but you also have historically an extremely low labor participation rate. So, you know, the full employment number is pretty meaningless. I think if you want to get back to actually having growth, you need to do two things. One is that you've had an environment where over the last, especially in the last decade, but certainly over the last 20, 30 years, real wages have stagnated or gone down, while you know, assets have just gone sky high. And so what you have is an environment where returns to capital have soared and returns to labor have absolutely cratered. And you need to probably rebalance that slightly. That may sound socialist to some people, but the truth of the matter is that the kind of pact that capitalism and democracy made, and bear in mind, capitalism as a system was never really successful to make that part of a democracy. And the reason for that is because if you want to be a proper capitalist, you want to sell stuff to lots of people because that's the way you make the most profit. If you're a democracy, you want lots of people to get parts of the economic pie. And the two work beautifully for that reason, because capitalism gets a market given to it thanks to democracy. And democracy in demand requires capitalism to kind of give some element of redistribution so that people actually feel that, you know, there's growth for them personally. So I think your return to labor has to go up. You can't get away from that. If you really want to be a true free marketeer and a true capitalist, you look at labor and you think it's being paid far too little. The second thing, which, you know, you and I have discussed many times before, is that when a system grows, a system needs also to have capacity for debt. When you have debt at levels you have right now, it is so supersaturated that it is impossible for people to feel that they've got any income past worth servicing to actually go out there and spend. And also, by the way, they don't really save anymore. And so if you think about that, saving is future investment as well. So you need to get that debt pile down, because that is what firstly allows you to have more capital to invest in the future, which is important. Secondly, getting that debt pile down gives you more capacity to go out, produce, borrow, etc. over the next few decades to get growth back in again.
Dr. Bob, you're the best, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for coming on today, brother.
No, Todd, always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
And, of course, that was Dr. Bob Swarup from Camdor Global, also the author of Money Mania, Panics, Booms, and Busts. But you can see the problem, you know, which we talk about frequently here, is the debt. It always comes down to debt. And if we can't take care of the debt, then we create a much bigger problem. And I think that is an issue that, you know, is going to live on, because nobody seems to have interest in getting rid or taking care of debt. And it's a sad situation. because, you know, when you continue to pile up debt, we're never going to get out, and it's going to create a bigger problem. But really, what it really creates the problem for is, back to our usual, is the free market system. And that's what, you know, really is sad about what's going on, is that we've basically eliminated the free market system, because we can think it's free. But again, the debt pile, I mean, I don't know if you noticed, but on Monday they announced that college debt was up 400% or something like that since 2003. Think about that for a minute. I mean, these are kids that have trouble getting jobs. They're never going to get out. And that is, at the end of the day, you know, when you don't have a Federal Reserve printing your money for you, debt is the major killer. And I think that this is where, you know, we have to understand that it needs to be resolved. And until we decide to really step up and handle debt, you heard what, you know, Dr. Bob is saying, but that's the real problem. But, you know, of course, the banks love to get debt because it's really just taking money for them. And they know they don't have much risk with the debt that they are exposed to. So why would they care? And that's something that I think is you should think about, and think about it closely, because that's kind of the whole deal, you know. And hey, Dr. Bob was great. And of course, he was brought to you by Audible Books. And of course, you know, they give a free trial. I got to tell you, it's the greatest service. You know, I have it on my iPhone. You know, I go there and check it out. And, you know, for listeners, Audible's offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. And, of course, you know, I like Stuart Woods a lot. And I think he's got some great characters I enjoy. And, of course, to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/The Bubba Show. Again, that's audibletrial.com/The Bubba Show for your free audiobook. And of course, don't forget to go to libertytalk.fm and download the show every day, as well as The Sporting Edge on the weekends. And of course, it's Bubba Trading. You got to check it out. In the meantime, everybody, thank you so much for being here. Always love to be a part of your day. And of course, this is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, we'll see you back here tomorrow at the same time, same station, The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, have a great night, everybody. Thanks. Wake up, Maggie.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.